Welcome to Family Talk with your host, psychologist and author, Dr. James Dobson. I'm Ryan Dobson here along with my co-host, Luann Crane. And we have a highly relevant program planned for our listeners today, especially those who are currently single and looking towards marriage.
Well, that's right. Ryan and Doctor, let me present a little statistic here that may or may not surprise you. The U.S. Census reports that since 1969, the average age of marriage for women has risen from 20 to now 26. The average age for men has risen from 23 to now 28.
Well, Luann, that statistic doesn't surprise me because the institution of marriage is changing and it's undergone some very significant revisions in its structure in the past three decades. And there are many reasons for it, and we can't go into all of them. But one of them is that many young people, even those growing up in Christian homes, have seen marital conflict and divorce within their own families. They've seen agitation and pain and conflict. And many of them are wary of getting into a relationship that may not last.
Sure.
But being loved by someone who promises to be there for better, for worse, for richer, for poorer, in sickness and in health, all the days of your life. That's a great concept. And yet many young people are nervous about and concerned about it, and some are not willing to go there for their own reasons.
It's our deepest longing, and yet, understandably, there's a lot of disillusionment out there.
Exactly. And we're going to talk today about courtship and marriage with a couple that went together for 10 years off and on, more off than on, I think, and indecision about whether or not it was the thing to do to get married. And today they're happily married, I'm pleased to say, and they're going to share their journey with us today. And they're going to open their lives a little bit in a way that I think others would not be willing to do. And I think it's going to be very helpful, especially for those who are single and contemplating this life, and probably for some who have fairly recently married. And we're going to discuss that subject with David and Brody Wheaton. I've talked to you, David, before. It was about your experience in college and also discussed your tennis career because you were good, man. You were really good. Now you're an old man. What are you, 39?
I'm actually 42 now.
42. You really are old.
Yeah. I know.
Easy.
I'm the youngest in my family, and I lost my hair first. I don't know how that's fair, but anyway.
But you're still playing some tennis, aren't you?
I am still playing some tennis. I retired, and I hate to use that word retired, but, you know, when I was 32 years old, I came off the tour. I had played for 13 years, so that was back at the end of 2001. And so for about the last 10 years, I have still remained a bit a part of the game. I played some of what they call the seniors tour by playing the over 35 doubles over at Wimbledon or the U.S. Open and so forth. So I still play some, but not nearly as regularly as I used to play.
Well, the most important win that you had was equivalent to the Masters tournament.
That's right. It was called the Grand Slam Cup. That was in 1991. I was 22 years old, and it was the most significant tennis victory of my life, but it was also significant spiritually for me as well. And I distinctly remember, you know, within 10 minutes after doing the fist pump, after beating Michael Chang in the final, I'm there holding the trophy. I look above the photographers' heads, and everyone was gone from the stadium within about 15, 20 minutes after the match. And I distinctly remember thinking, wow, came to an end really quickly.
Yeah.
And it was the first time that God really got me by the nape of the neck and said, you know, you're inwardly conflicted because your heart's not right before me. And you could see even attaining what you've always wanted to attain, these big tournament win, you're never going to be fulfilled and satisfied unless you're right with me. And about 2 years after that big one is when God really turned around my life, and I came to a point of, I think, true repentance and faith in Christ. And really everything changed from my tennis to my personal life as well for that.
I don't know if you know it, but I have written and spoken many times on what I call life trashing your trophies. Eventually,
yes.
It will.
Yeah.
Eventually, it won't matter. Eventually, you won't care. I don't care how great your trophies. There
yep.
comes a point where you realize there's got to be something more. Mm-hmm. Brody, I'm anxious to get you into this. When did you meet David?
I actually met David, I don't remember the exact day. I was 5 years old and David was 8 years old.
You don't remember the day.
I don't remember the day as a five-year-old.
Where'd you meet?
I was born in Cincinnati, Ohio, and we moved to Minnesota when I was five. And 2 weeks after we moved to Minnesota, my mom arranged for us to have cross-country ski lessons from none other than David's mom at a place called Lake Grace. And within weeks, my mom and David's mom had a lot of conversations, and my mom actually came to Christ through David's mom.
So your mom, mm-hmm. David, led her mom
yeah. That's right.
to the Lord.
My mom is quite the evangelist, very
yeah.
much so.
And you did not grow up in a Christian home,
No,
Brody.
I didn't. You know, David had a real idyllic childhood, you know, strong Christian parents, a family really surrounding him. He was the youngest growing up in tennis, and you just heard all of that he was able to accomplish through that. I actually grew up in a really conflicted home as a result of my mom coming to Christ.
Yeah.
After they moved here and she came to Christ, my dad was not in favor of that. Mm. So there was a real conflicted home. My dad gave my mom a choice when I was 13, just saying, you either give up your faith or I'm leaving.
Oh, my.
And, you know, that's a choice that a Christian doesn't want to have to make, but
yeah.
she certainly had to make.
David, do you remember meeting this little kid?
I don't remember the exact day either, but we were so young, and after that divorce happened, and our families became, you know, quite close together, and my dad became sort of like a surrogate father to Brody. So I remember Brody being, and her older brother was more my age. Brody is 3 or 4 years younger than I am, and so I was better friends with her older brother, who was about my age. So I remember their family around all the time, and my parents really put a lot into their family, Brody's family. Matter of fact, yeah. almost took them into our family in a way during this really difficult time they were going through. So I do remember Brody from the youngest years, for sure. And we, in a way, as we got into our teens and then into our 20s, I mean, there was a little bit of the, I wouldn't say totally, but a little bit of the brother-sister type relationship where we were just very close and someone I had known my whole life.
On his side, I had more the schoolgirl crush on my brother's best friend. So.
Yeah, but you know, the seniors in high school aren't interested in the eighth graders at the time. So,
so the age difference inhibited the spark to some degree. I talked in my new book, Head Over Heels. I talked about Some Enchanted Evening Across a Crowded Room. It's an old song, but the essence of it is I saw her, and there was an explosion. You didn't have that.
That is a very perceptive point, and that's exactly right, because I had known her for so long, and she had been part of the family. You know, like I said, not exactly like a sister, but there was just such a familiarity there that there wasn't that. And I think that was one of the reasons that I think I had in my own mind been expecting that the person I would marry would be sort of see them across the room and the mystery of getting to know someone and something you see like in a Hollywood movie.
Yeah.
But that wasn't the case. And I thought maybe that I really needed to have that before I went forward.
Yeah.
But before we did become married, when we got engaged, it was amazing how that sort of supernaturally, God supernaturally changed my heart in that regard. Because once we were engaged, once that commitment was made, once I took that little step of faith forward to yeah. make that commitment to get engaged, that spark and that chemistry really changed a lot. It was really amazing to see what happened.
Brody, the chemistry was there for you pretty much all the way through, wasn't it?
That's right. It would only deepen as I grew to know David better, especially once he was saved and saw the complete transformation in his life. I had great respect for him, and yeah, it definitely deepened. You know, you've idolized something for so long, you've wanted something for so long, that all of a sudden it starts happening and you feel tremendous pressure to the point where you're not yourself either. So then you're not relaxing around that person,
sure.
you're not being yourself, and that doesn't make for a good relationship.
I told you when we were talking about all this in my office that Shirley and I walked a similar road, although not it didn't start when we were little kids. It started in college, but I was 2 years older than Shirley, and I had no intention of marrying her or anybody else. And I was heading to the University of Texas to go to get a PhD. And marriage didn't fit into that. I didn't have the money to get married and bring a wife with me. And so there came a point in which I just said, no, it isn't going to work. And I'm not going to marry you. And I don't want to tie you up through your senior year in college and then feel responsible because you've now missed your opportunity to marry somebody else. And so I think it's better that we break up. And Shirley handled that perfectly. I mean perfectly. It was New Year's Eve. And we'd had a wonderful time. We weren't fighting or anything. But I was going back to the Army. I was in the Army by that time. And I was leaving the next morning at 5 o'clock in the morning. And I told her this. And her answer was, well, I've been thinking the same thing. Mm-hmm. You know, there are some guys I wanted to go with. And I think maybe we ought to just kind of set it aside for a while. And it shocked the daylights out of me because I thought she was going to hang on to me. And I walked her to the door and I said, can I kiss you goodbye? And she said, no, let's shake on it. And she put her hand up and she went in and cried all night. But I never knew that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I didn't know that I had absolutely broken her heart. And if I'd have known it, I'd have felt sorry for her, but I would not have loved her. But within 24 hours, I loved her. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you...
There are definitely some similarities there. Brody and I dated for the first time after knowing each other all these years. We dated for the first time at the behest of my father. He approached me and said, you know, I really think, you know, you're coming to this age and you should consider Brody as a potential wife. And of course I had because, you know, I think it was sort of expected in a certain sense that we had known each other for so long. We shared the same faith. We had a lot of the same interests. We're from the same area. When I was 30 years old, she was 27. We dated for about a year. And at the end of that year, I didn't feel a real strong inner compulsion to get married, not only to Brody, but really, I think, to anyone at that particular time in my life. I'm not sure why, but I just didn't have a strong desire. And at the end of that year, I think Brody did a very good thing that she asked, you know, where do you think this is going? Because we've been dating now for a year, and if this is not really going on towards the next step of engagement, it might be better if we didn't continue just to stay in a dating relationship, which I think is exactly the right thing to do. And so we actually broke up at that time. And the interesting thing was—
Let me understand. Brody, you were the initiator of this breakup. You were saying, I've had enough.
Well, I think, as you've already heard, you know, David's father was the one who had suggested they consider dating me, and I knew that. I felt so much pressure that it kind of all rested on my shoulders as to whether it worked out, whether he was attracted to me, whether we clicked, whether anything worked. And I think I was waiting to see whether it was going to change while we were dating, and it really didn't. And I just didn't see that we were moving towards marriage, which was the purpose we had stated when we first started dating as to why we were going to be dating, was to determine whether or not we could marry. And so it was just to ask David, where are you on this now? Are we moving towards marriage still, or is this not going to work?
Yeah, that was my answer. My answer is I really don't know. I don't sense that this is going towards engagement. I think it was really a mutual decision at that point that that's what we should do. And the really interesting thing about it was after that decision was made, you know, there was a time of disappointment there, and I think especially for Brody.
But heartbreaking.
Yeah, it was. Mm-hmm. But we actually started to become even better friends. It didn't hurt our friendship. We broke up. There was a time where we were apart, and then it seemed in some way, some strange way, to really help our friendship. And we went on for the next several years, and we became actually even better friends before we dated again.
Let me explain that, okay? I wrote a book called Love Must Be Tough, and that is the essence of the book. It's when she took the expectation away and allowed you to be out of the cage. You didn't have to prove something anymore or be something or feel something. That's what Shirley did for me. You know, I've got some plans too. And you go ahead and do what you need to do. So the relationship often flowers when you say, in effect, love must be tough. If it isn't going to work, I'm not going to force it. Love will not grow when it is not free. So I could have titled my book, Love Must Be Free. As well as Love Must Be Tough.
Doctor, in a way, it was Brody maintaining that line of self-respect for herself,
wasn't
it?
She did.
Well, I can't take total credit for it. I was reading a book, Boy Meets Girl by Joshua Harris.
You read the wrong book.
I'm kidding. But I was reading that book about the purposes of dating is to determine whether or not you can marry someone. And we had started that way, and it wasn't progressing the way it should. Mm-hmm. But I'm not sure that I totally let him go, though, Dr. Dobson, at that point, because David was really an idol in my life, and that continued to be a problem even into the second time we dated.
You see, Shirley didn't let me go either, but I thought she did.
Okay.
She was willing to have the self-discipline to let me walk away, even though it was breaking her heart. And it did. It broke her heart. And so much so that when I called her, Ryan, the next night, I didn't get a real good answer or response from her. She had been wounded and hurt, and she was prepared to do whatever she had to do. That's the self-respect.
Mm. Brody, for the woman listening right now who thinks she's got this all in check and everything's fine, describe a little bit more of what you mean when you say you're holding David as an idol. What did that look like for you?
Sure. I guess when it's you examine your life and say, what are the things that occupy my thoughts, my desires, my goals, and my dreams? Does it incorporate that person all the time? And is that person the full focus of my life? Mm. Whereas with Christ on the throne of your life, it's what gifts has he given me? How can I serve him more? How can I know him more? It's about a personal relationship with Christ and making him Lord of your life. David was really on the throne of my life. Things like I'd maybe meet another guy to date and he'd get compared to David, or activities. I'd be interested in what he was doing, what his life involved. I knew everything about him, whereas he may not have known as much about me. It was more of an all-consuming. I think about what idols can be in your life. They can be things like a certain job, or a number of children, or being honored by people, or a lot of money. I mean, those can become idols in our life where they're the things that motivate us or drive us. Mm-hmm. And I guess that's what I'm trying to say, is that the idea of marrying David was something that motivated me. Mm-hmm. And it had to be Christ that motivated me instead of David.
If I were to try to put it in words, Brody, and you tell me if this is accurate, God will not compete with anything or anybody for preeminence in our lives. Mm. I mean, you have to put him in first place.
Right.
And sometimes hard to do, especially when, as a woman, your love for this man was paramount. Now, I don't think there was anything wrong with the love that you felt. But what place did God have? And was it so intense, the relationship that you wanted to have with David, that you didn't have time for devotion to God? He was not first in your life.
Right.
Would that put it into words?
Definitely. And also, would that be what is going to define your life? The other thing about that time is that I look back on it now, and I'm not sure I was truly saved then. Mm. I didn't have the fruit of a Christian life. And after we broke up that first time, it really sent me through an examining of my life. And that was a real turning point in my life to understand that God is sovereign. He is in control over every little detail in our lives to make us more like his son. Mm-hmm. And when I understood that, it gave me a peace to understand that God even understood what had gone on between David and I, and that he was in control of that. And I really yielded my will to him at that point. It was a completely different relationship than I had with Christ before.
Yeah, I think from a man's standpoint also, a man doesn't want to feel like he's being corralled into a marriage. You know, like all the expectations are for this to happen. It just doesn't seem like the way it should be.
David, is it simplistic to say that you had a problem with commitment, or is it much more complicated than that?
I think there's an element to that. I think there's a couple things I'd say to that, is that you know, I come from a very close family. And so I didn't have maybe some of the impetus inside of me, like I was lonely or I didn't have companionship. I was very close to my family. I'm the youngest of four kids. They all live in the same neighborhood. I live about 10 minutes away. So we see each other a lot, you know, just going down the street and having dinners together. So there wasn't that element pushing me to say, you know, I'm in need of a companion. I'm really lonely. That's an element that, you know, turns people towards marriage. There wasn't really that much. I think the other thing was I was sort of in between minds on whether I was really truly intended to be married. I didn't have a super strong desire. I felt like I'm contentedly single until God shows me otherwise.
Us girls cannot understand that. I'm sorry. We just don't get that, right? To have a guy say that.
That's funny because I totally understand that. And I think there's a lot of guys that do that just get focused on certain things and think, well, I'm okay. I'm doing fine.
Unfortunately, and I know this is not your case because you were committed to the Lord early on, but a lot of guys don't commit because they get everything they want. Without committing.
Yeah, well, I mean, I firmly believe that, you know, singleness when you're celibate is truly singleness, and then that is a challenge. And so, but that particular time in my life, by God's grace, I was, by His grace, celibate. And so, you know, He gave me the ability to restrain the desires that a lot of men have, which was wonderful. And I think that's part of the reason the two times we dated, that He protected us from being involved in that way. I think that gave us the opportunity when the third time came around to actually be married.
You knew it was
very
right.
Thankful.
Brody, I have to ask you a really tough question. With many couples that I have counseled at this point, where a guy doesn't want to commit, I have suggested that you let him go. You did do that. You sort of hung on, and 10 years later, you were rewarded for it because you got what you had longed for. But often, a man who won't commit takes the best years of a woman's life, and then it doesn't go anywhere. And I have said, you know, if he isn't going to move, if he has a problem with commitment, move on.
Yeah, and I've heard that said even regarding David. And you know, people ask, well, what took you so long once we actually were engaged? And I like to come to his defense and say, God had a lot to do in my life. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of ways I look at David because he was really contentedly single. And I look at him and I think, I wonder if God held him back while he was working on me.
Isn't that interesting
how
that
worked?
Well, the reason I say that is because the first time we broke up resulted in what I believe was my true salvation. And the second time we broke up, I think God had me go through it again because I hadn't quite learned the idol part. He still had to teach me that. And that was a big part of it because I hadn't totally let him go. Mm.
Well, we've been talking to David and Brody Wheaton about their journey together, and we're trying to cover more than 10 years, maybe closer to 40, in your case, David, and as to how you've gotten to this moment. You're happily married. It's really been a pleasure just listening to you and hearing the way the Lord has worked in your life. But there's a whole lot more here that we want to talk about. Frankly, even though you're married, a lot of what you have to say will relate to singles who are out there. And I'm always looking for new sources of information and help for those that are walking that path. So if you don't mind, we're going to sit right here at this table in this studio and talk till we're through, and then we will take that narrative after you're gone. Is that all right?
That would be great. It's been a great privilege to be here.
Brody, it's really nice meeting you.
Thank you, Dr. Dobson. It's been a privilege to be here.
You enjoying married life?
I am. It's been well worth the wait.
Been married 2 years.
To God be the glory.
He will walk with you if you put Him first. And we've got a whole lot more to talk about, so just sit tight, okay?
Sounds great, Dr. Dobson.
Thank you.
And to our listeners, plan to be with us tomorrow for more with the Wheatons. And if you can't catch us on a local Christian station, you can always come to our website to stream the program or download it. And that is familytalk.org.
Or, Ryan, you can even request a CD copy there. Mm-hmm. We heard two different books referenced today. One is Dr. Dobson's brand new book, Head Over Heels, How to Fall in Love and Land on Your Feet. And then, of course, his classic book on marriage, Love Must Be Tough. Both are available at familytalk.org.
Or if you prefer to call us for those resources, we are available for that. Our number is 877-732-6825. Again, 877-732-6825.
As we close, this quick reminder that Family Talk is completely listener supported. Mm-hmm. If you are able to donate to the work here, it would help us start our new fiscal year off on the right foot. The accountants out there know exactly what that means. You can donate at familytalk.org, or one last time, that phone number, 877-732-6825.
Thanks for being with us today, and be sure to join us tomorrow for the rest of our discussion with the Wheatons right here on Family Talk with Dr. James Dobson.